This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. What kinds of questions should you ask yourself when you come home from a long trip to help you decide if you should take off and go again or settle back down somewhere for a little while? Tough call. Also, what is the number one thing you can do to win over locals? And it's all happening next and so much more. So strap in. Thank you so much for being here. And you know what I'm going to say. Welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey there, it's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thank you so very much for taking the time to tune in. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. So whether you're taking your first trip or your 50th, whether you're a newbie or a permanent nomad, you love travel. I love travel. That's the thing that unites everybody in this community, because nobody here wants to go home before they have to from a trip. You know, when you're on a trip and you're like, ah, I got to go back now, and I'm not ready to go back. I don't want to pack my suitcase. I don't want to leave this place. Well, you're in luck because you don't have to. That's what this show is all about. And you are joining many thousands of people worldwide listening to this show. It blows my mind that this show has been downloaded in 195 countries and it keeps growing. And I'm just really excited to have you as part of this virtual caravan, this community of listeners worldwide. And this is a community powered show. So I invite you to get in touch anytime. My email is jason@zerototravel.com. And I always say, hey, if you got any guests, recommendations that you want me to bring on, topics you want me to cover, ideas to put on the show. I've been getting a lot of these messages lately, which is great, which means the message is clear. This is your platform and I'm here to deliver the goods, whatever it is you want to hear. And if you check in, just let me know what you think of the show too. Tell me your story. Introduce yourself. Tell me a little bit about yourself. It's always a pleasure when I dip into the email inbox to hear from listeners. And I want to give a couple shout outs here and feature. I always feature some of you amazing, fine folks in this community. And I want to say congratulations to Suzanne because she just bought a one-way ticket to Chiang Mai, Thailand. She has made plans to attend a one-month yoga teacher training and, quote, travel around the rest of Southeast Asia from there while seeing if I can build a location-dependent business. She also says, I'll be wolfing, volunteering, and trying to figure out a lifestyle that makes me really excited and happy to wake up and start the day. And I'm currently selling most of my things and traveling and planning to travel really light. You've given me some amazing tips on how to do so. And she said a lot of nice things about the podcast. I just want to say, Suzanne, congratulations. Thank you so much for checking in and sharing this because it warms my heart beyond belief when I get these emails from people. And whatever stage you're in, you know, you might not have bought the one-way ticket yet, but everybody has to make that transition to travel. This is something I've been talking about and thinking about a lot lately, is that transition to travel. And anytime you're doing a long-term trip or chunking out time to do an extended excursion somewhere, there are all these transitional pieces. And it's not just logistics because, you know, getting rid of your stuff is something that you can say easily, okay, I'll get rid of my stuff. But of course, there are some emotional ties to certain things and there are a lot of emotions around it. Now, let's talk about some of the things I mentioned at the top of the show here. First of all, what kind of questions should you ask yourself when you return from a trip to decide if you should take off again or what you should do? This goes back to that transition to travel piece. And when you come back, you're, I guess, trying to decide if you should transition to another trip or if you should transition back to quote-unquote society. I'm not going to share thoughts on this today because I think I want to spin this out into a whole episode. But my guest today does share her thoughts, and she talks about the question she always says to herself when she comes back from an adventure to decide if going again is right for her or not. So you're going to want to listen to this interview and check that out. Now, let's get into the number one thing you can do to win over locals, because everybody wants to meet locals. I mean, that's the ultimate experience when you hang with the locals. They show you around. You know, you're really getting the authentic experience of a place. I know how this can be. Sometimes it happens very spontaneously and easily, and sometimes you have to really work to meet locals and go out of your way, which is why maybe a lot of travelers, I shouldn't say a lot of travelers, but people can be lazy about just going to see the sites, going back to the hostel, interacting with other travelers, or going back to your B&B, wherever you're, whatever you're doing, wherever you are. It's a lot easier to interact with other travelers than it is to interact with locals and get to the point where you can, say, be invited over to somebody's house for dinner or spend the night with them. And this is about a mindset attitude, I think. But the thing that you can do to win over locals the most is speak some of the language. And the more I've traveled, the more I've learned, even if you just learn a couple phrases, you can really win locals over, particularly if those phrases are something slangy or something that's really integral to the culture and not necessarily common things for foreigners to say. It really catches people by surprise and they're like, oh, that's cool, you know that. And I've used this in various countries, this tactic, if you will. Now let's get into this interview. I'm excited to bring another edition of our Inspiring Female Adventurers series. You're going to love this interview with Sarah. What she did took a lot of guts, and it was great to hear her on the ground experience. I'm excited to share it with you. Please enjoy the interview. Thanks once again, and I'll see you on the other side. My guest today traveled 10,000 miles on foot from Siberia to Australia alone. An epic walk that lasted 3 years, during which she survived mafia, drug dealers, thieves on horseback, temperatures from sub-zero to scorching, dangerous wildlife encounters, dehydration, and countless other life-threatening occurrences. That takes some serious guts. And she wrote a book about this journey. It's called Wild by Nature. It's available now. And I'm thrilled that she's here to talk about her experience. Sarah Marquise, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Hi, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Really good. Thank you.
So we were just figuring this out. We're kind of in the same, I guess we are in the same time zone, because I'm up in Norway and you are in Switzerland, correct?
Yeah, I'm in the Alps. It's like snowing, tons of snow. It's just falling from the sky.
Did you grow up in the Alps specifically?
I just grew up in the northern part of Switzerland, which is not really the Alps, but I, as soon as I realized that it was sunny here, an amazing landscape, I just moved here straight away.
Yeah, and what town are you in?
Well, I'm near Verbier. It's a really flashy ski resort in the mountain, and I'm just located just near that place in a small village, really quiet village, with 200 people live here.
Oh, wow. That is small.
Yeah. It's a tiny, nice place.
So you've done a lot of these different adventures, big adventures. And I want to focus on this one today. But just to give everybody who's listening a little bit of context, do you want to share a little bit about your career, this sort of adventuring career you created for yourself? And like, I guess give us a little bit of a taste of some of the other types of things that you've done.
Yeah, so for the last 23 years, I circumnavigate the planet on foot once. And I guess it just starts with one step at a time, but always been with a lot of curiosity from my part. And then I start to discover nature and our amazing bond that we've got with nature. And more I was walking, more I wanted to walk. And still, I didn't know at the time why I was walking, why I wanted to go back to nature and do those really long walks. So I start my longest walk with the Pacific Crest Trail in the States, where I walk from the Canadian border all the way to the Mexican border. And then I see bigger scales, bigger continents, and I end up in Australia, where I walk around Australia on a 17-month journey. That was a really long 14,000 kilometers journey. And then I get attracted by the mountain and the Incas in South America. So I walk on the top of the Andes from Santiago de Chile all the way to Chile and then Bolivia to end up in Peru, in Machu Picchu, where I stopped. And then I had other dream again coming through me and included this one, this really long expedition of 3 years where I walked from Siberia to Australia. And after this one, I dream about, that was one of my oldest dreams, which is to survive off the land like the Aboriginal people used to do years ago. So I just come back from this expedition called Dropped into the Wild Corner, where I get dropped with a chopper in Australia in a northwest corner where there is snakes and salty crocodiles.
Okay. So, well, I have a lot of questions, and I guess where do I start here? I mean, the first one is, You tend towards, obviously, these walking adventures, right? So I'm curious what it is about walking specifically, and also why you choose the types of routes you do, because it sounds like the types of adventures you choose aren't, you're not saying, oh, I'm going to walk through primarily urban environments. You're walking through nature because you said you have this connection with nature, but with that comes a lot of solitude. So why do you choose these solitary types of adventures where you're going to really be on your own for extended periods of time, and why walking?
Well, I think we need a fire going on here and a really full night to explain to you why I'm actually walking, because I still really don't know why I'm walking, see? Because it's not an intellectual answer that I've got for you. It's really a deeper answer, which is a relation with nature. We are from nature and we forgot about it most of the time. And we've got this amazing body of ours, and it's a perfect machine. And this machine, it's just like we are another mammals. You know, we are from the mammals family, and we never use our instinct as much as we can. And for me, be like dropped in the wild alone in those remote area, it's time to get connected again. You know, it's the ultimate challenge where I have to shed my human skin and become this wild thing. And I always believe that we are not using all our capacity. You know, we are not using all our resources that we've got inside us. And I'm just like experiencing all those really the strengths that we've got inside our body and in mind to just push it a bit every time a bit further and further to discover that there is further again. We can go further than I thought we could, you know? And every time I push the boundaries and every time I jump a bit further and every time it's possible.
And I mean, it sounds like you do have the answer to why you walk, because it's really about you, I guess, reconnecting on this primal level, or connecting on this primal level with our planet and with nature. And the thing about walking too is it's the pace, right? I mean, it's, you can't just cruise by something and ignore it. You know, you're at like a very slow pace. How does that change the travel experience?
Well, actually makes everything right, because I discovered over the years that actually the walking pace, it's actually our human pace. We are made to go to at that speed. Because if we go faster, it's our sense and nerve system and our capacity of capturing the landscape. It's too fast for what we've got, the tools we've got in us. Our sense are made for walking only. So anything faster than this, we capture but not 100% of the experience. So walking, it's just amazing because it just feeds you with everything around you. It's just like a full-on experience. Most of the people think, oh my God, this is boring, you know.
I love to walk, but I know what you mean. Yeah,
but that's good.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, this is not boring at all. You know?
It's a bit of a meditation for me personally. I think it clears headspace. It does get you connected. And I mean, the level you're doing it at is quite extreme, you know, the walks you're undertaking. So I'm curious so you're back home right now. And when you're not on a journey like this, do you find it hard to be connected in such like a primal way? Like, do you have to go do these expeditions in order to plug back in? Do you struggle when you're at home with that connection?
Well, not really, because over the years I learned how to pull up the trigger. You know, when I have to be really sensitive, I can be. And sometimes when I'm in the middle of the crowd and middle of people, be sensitive at that time is not helping. So I kind of push the right button at the right time. But of course, be away from nature, my sensibility or my capacity of feeling, what is my surrounding in a deeper level, it's actually going away, fading away. So it needs to get connected again to actually be getting those senses back.
You have an interesting take because you've done multiple large expeditions like this that all involve walking. So you could sort of categorize them and probably take lessons from each one. But in a way, you could also look at it as one giant experience. And if you were going to look at it from that sort of large, you know, we're in a plane and we're looking at the big view of everything you've done, how would you categorize this sort of string of adventures you've done? Would you say this is like a spiritual journey for you, or is it just who you are and this is the way you express yourself? Or how do you see that, how it's all come together as you connect the dots looking backwards?
You know, in life, we make choices. We choose which road we want to be in. Like, if you are on the right side of the road, you are on the right side of the road. If you want to be on the left side, you are on the left. And then you're going left, and then the right, you're going right. You can be on the right and going left. So I guess it's the mission we all have. For me, I decided to follow my heart from a long time ago. And I've just been following my heart, which is that's what is inside my heart. It's what I've done today and yesterday and the day before. And it's all my life been spent in the tent, in most of my time in nature, connected with nature. But also my mission for me, when I came back from Australia the first time after my long walk, I decide that if I come back, I want to come back, but I've got a mission to actually share my story, share this connection with people. So I start writing, which is not one of my forte really. And I start writing and doing speaking engagement because I want to share my story with people. First of all, to tell them that there is more into life than what we think it is. And secondly, I wanted to share the magic connection we do have with nature.
And encourage people to kind of get out and experience that on their own.
And also happiness, it's maybe not what we think it is. Maybe it's just those little things that we experience through every day in a different level, you know?
Yeah, sure. And I mean, I guess the flip side of that would be somebody would say, well, do you have to undertake such extreme adventures if you can just find the happiness at home? And that might be one person's perspective. I'm not saying it's mine or yours. I'm just curious what you would think about somebody that would make that argument.
Yeah, I think there is no such a thing, you know, like each of us in this planet, we add up numbers. So I'm bringing to you my story with my experience, and somebody else will bring his story with another experience, like in his everyday life. And another person will come with a family story, which is every story is amazing. We don't have to compare story all the time and thinking, oh, this one is better than this one. Oh my God, why this one's doing this? And this? No, we too much in an intellectual way I think every person in this planet got amazing things to add up in this society. And that's what we have to focus on. It's what you've got in your bag. You know, I've got that in my bag. We can share it. We can compliment. We can exchange tricks and laugh and good time and bad time and go and move forward. This is my vision.
I love that. And that's, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's one thing I mentioned to people when they, you know, are starting, whether considering starting, you know, a blog or putting themselves out there in some way. I think it's important to share because you do have a unique voice. Again, I agree. I mean, everybody has their unique take and everybody's experience is, I think, valuable. And I think this is where you mentioned curiosity before. I mean, I think curiosity is one of the absolute driving factors of at least travelers, like that curiosity about the world, wanting to know what's out there. I mean, would you say if you were going to choose one word that drives you, is that the one word or is it something else?
No, curiosity, it's the key, you know, because if you can be, you know, if you can be whatever age you are now or tomorrow, if you can be curious as a kid, as when you were a little kid, It's a win-win situation for everybody. You never be a cranky one. You never get be one of those old, horrible person. And you always gonna be a nice person. And also, you have to have this sense of humor, you know, regarding life and situation. It's sense of humor. It's the best tools to survive.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions. Towing capacity varies by configuration. See Nissan Towing Guide and Owner's Manual for additional information. Always secure cargo. Now, back to the show. I mean, you have countless stories to tell from this adventure. Can you share something that happened along the way where your sense of humor really pulled you through a tough time? And maybe share something like that could be a private moment or something that you haven't really shared before. Can you think of an example?
Yeah, well, I've got this little nice story in my book where they took it off when the US publisher decided to publish my book. They took this story off the book because that was inappropriate, really. But I had this weird moment, you know, in Mongolia. Mongolia, it's a weird country, really. It's everything regarding the culture. It's really coded. So if you don't know the code, you don't know what that stands for and what it's doing that for. So I like to go in a country with a lot of knowledge about the culture, but Mongolia, there is not much out there information about Mongolia. So I've been doing my studies and I couldn't find much about it. So when I arrived in Mongolia, I've been attacked every night by big Mongolian, drunk Mongolian on a horse. But that was okay. That was more into it. I knew what they were up to. So I deal with the situation. But then during the day, usually Mongol on horse usually stop next to me. You have to picture, we are in the middle of the steppes. There is nobody around. Suddenly this bunch of guys come on a horse, stop near me, get down the horse and pee on the front of me.
on you or like next to you?
No, on me, on the front of me, like really, I can see them peeing, like the first time I was like so shocked that I look away, you know, like, I mean, oh my God, what's going on here?
Right.
You know, and they never laugh. They never show any expression on their face. They never say a word. And they just go back on their horse and just slowly go away, you know. And it's happened 100 times, like. Every time I see a Mongol guy on a horse, I say, no, he's not going to come and show his penis again. No, he's not going to do this.
Right.
And that was, I'm making fun of this situation because he become really clear that there's something missing on the culture code, you know, that I didn't understand quite clearly.
Did you find out what that was all about?
No, I've got a really good friend in Ulaanbaatar who's been studying in Europe. So he speaks English perfectly, and he had this boss culture on him. And I explained to him that situation. He said, oh, I've got really no idea what is it. You know, he doesn't know. But I think it was more like a territorial thing, you know, like more like we know than you are here, and this is our territory. You know, I think it was more like really that deep down, like an animal territory things, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned in passing some of the harassment you endured in Mongolia, drug dealers and people sort of harassing you in your tent and everything. And you kind of just mentioned that you dealt with that situation. How did you deal with that situation? Can you share what kind of was happening and how you sort of dealt with that?
So the thing is, over the years, I learned how to read a situation. So you have to read a situation without the words. It's like putting the mute button. You know, you push the mute button on the situation and then you study this, what's going on. So you have to read the body language. You have to read the intensity. You have to read the eyes. You have to read the posture and the animal's activity around, if they are agitated, if how the horse reacts. Every little detail, it's important. So once I do assess this situation, I will always stay away a maximum from them so they will not enter to my safety zone, you know. And then you have to act. So, for example, I've got a really good example where those guys on horse were completely drunk, you know. They were galloping through the steppe with the bottle of vodka in their hand, really. And I still don't know how they were actually staying on the saddle, really. They were so drunk. And they follow me, and they follow me, and they finally find me. They've been tracking my tracks. They're a really good tracker, though. And they arrive, so I face them, you know. And they wanted to touch me, to take my bag and everything. And so I stay really calm. I really look at the situation. And in one moment, you have to study the situation. In one moment, you can actually act, but you have to feel it. It's an energy, you know? And then I really run through the horse, and the horse get surprised. The horse rear, you know? They went on their back feet, and the front feet was in the air, and the Mongol nearly fall down, and they were so ashamed of that. They just don't turn around.
Wow.
You know?
You must have been scared, though.
Oh, yeah. It's always, you always got this adrenaline shot in through your body, which is really safe. You know, being scared, being afraid, it's the most important things. Well, saying that, you've got two different fear. You've got the real fear. Then the situation, it's actually something wrong, and your body tells you. And you've got the second one, which is the fake one, where you create the fear with what you actually saw the day before in the movie, or this situation remind you something. So your spirit and your mind work like a computer. So it will go back in the memory, in the memory card, and it will take this situation, look a bit like this one, and it will bring back this memory. And then you will be afraid of this scene because of what you experienced before. So you have to be really cautious about which kind of fear you've got, if it's a real one or it's a fake one.
And sometimes that's hard to distinguish, right? Like you have to take a step back and think.
Yeah, and experience. You know, the only way to learn is to be on the front of a situation. So you are on the front of a situation more than 10 times, then you could actually say, okay, this looks different than the last time. And then you can actually reflect on your feeling yourself. What was the feeling inside my body at that time and why now it's different and why this is doing? So you have to study yourself. You basically, on those trips, you are in front of the mirror of yourself. This is the most dangerous things to do, you know. You are with yourself, and if you don't like yourself, you're in trouble. You know, like, you have to face your fear, who you are, in a deeper level, and that makes the thing really interesting because you learn so much about yourself.
Would you say that intuition is your ultimate ally on a journey like this?
Yeah, definitely. I don't need an intellectual explanation of a situation.
Yeah.
So I've got a feeling, I'm out of there.
Hmm.
I don't wait for the intellect to assess the situation and give me a, you know, the intellect will actually trick you in a really bad way most of the time. You have to listen to your guts.
Yeah, because it sounds like you're really tapped into that part of you during these adventures, because it sounds to me like you're using a combination of intuition and experience. You know, like you say, you're reading the situation, but at the same time, it sounds like the split is more in favor of the intuition.
Yeah. You know, you learn more like to let it go. You can have all the knowledge in the world. You've been studying, you know what you're doing. You know by the book what you're doing.
Yeah.
But then after that, you need to let it go and open the door and take your human skin away and be like having the wind through your skin and feel the wind, feel the situation. That's the only way to survive. That's why actually today I'm still alive.
I mean, you mentioned sort of learning from these experiences, right? Like learning about yourself because you're on these expeditions, you're alone often. Now you've done so many of these over the years. How does the experience impact what you can learn about yourself? I mean, if that makes sense, because obviously you're doing these in different stages of your life and at different times, but you do have all this experience. So how does that work?
It's a really good question, you know, because the most interesting expedition I've done, it was the first one. You know, when I walked from on the Pacific Crest Trail in the States, and because I had no idea. So you're like a virgin canvas. And you've got no idea whatsoever. So everything it's writing or painting in that canvas, it's going to be a new feeling. So it's just this amazing trip where everything is enhanced, you know, like it's incredible. Every move, it's incredible because you've got no idea. You never experienced. So then it's a balance because experience give you another tool, another step, you can go further and further, and then you open new doors. So it's a different kind of feeling, but I think it's how life goes, you know? It's how life's supposed to go. We're supposed to go from one year to another and learn new things and grow and in a different way. We can't just stick with one way.
I've found that experience as well, my first, you know, big backpacking trip. I found everything was so much more heightened and I was so much more aware of the what I was learning, what was happening, and just it was incredible. But now you learn so much, but I guess it's in a different way. And I do think, like, going back to what you said about curiosity, and maybe you agree that curiosity, you have to like up your curiosity level. You can't ever lose that because it's about bringing that beginner's mind mentality to each trip so you can be open to learning new things.
Yeah, and curiosity, it's sometimes we forgot about it. You know, we get caught in everyday life and we get caught with a rhythm. We get caught with what we know. And that's why I like to learn new things. Our mind, it works like a really good tool. So it always, the mind is always easy to go back to bad habit or habits, just habits. And you have to challenge yourself all the time. You have to get out of your comfort zone to be able to touch again this unknown zone where you're fragile and you don't know what you're doing. And And then only then, you know, then you're going to learn something.
I wanted to ask you about changing or adjusting your comfort zone. I was watching one of your talks online, and you kind of mentioned being, I don't know if this is the case now because the talk was a few years ago, but you mentioned being a vegetarian, but then you had to essentially eat meat because of the circumstances. I don't know if that's the case now. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on compromising your core beliefs while you're traveling to adjust to your situation or the culture or whatever the case is.
So when I was 11 years old, I grew up in a middle-class family where we had a garden, where all the veggies was from the garden, and we had chooks and rabbits and some lamb and everything, you know, like we were self-sufficient. But then when I was 11, I realized that what I was eating in my plate was actually my best friend. It was one of the sheep on the field. She was too old, so they decided to do sausages with her. So that's where I stopped eating meat, because I realized then those four-legged animals, they got a conscience, you know. They were my friend, and I knew my friend. You know, I knew them. I knew how they can be. They've got a heart. They've got a feeling. They're like us. They just don't look like us as much. That's all. So I decided to stop eating meat for this reason. And then I haven't touched meat for many, many years until I've done some surviving in Australia. And I decided to go through this process of my question at the time was, am I able as a white female to actually survive in the wild? That was my question. And how deep this connection with nature that I'm supposed to have as a mammals, you know? When you eat meat, if every person who eat a chicken were actually able to kill the chicken, clean the chicken and open the chicken and clean it, it's a hell of a journey. It's a hell of a process. And that's what I did. I wanted to be on the front of the fact then. I wanted to know if I was actually able to do this. So I experienced this during this journey. Then I stopped eating meat. So, for example, the last expedition, I came back in October last year. I did surviving full on, but I only eat fish, and I've been only eating roots and berries and also some palm trees and Trix bush tucker from the Australian bush. Because I've done this experience and I don't want to go through it. I don't want to kill anything.
Yeah. And yes. I mean, has there been a situation where you've had to maybe compromise one of your values, whether it's, you know, we focused on the food, but I mean, if there's something else where, you know, you're in a cultural situation where you're like, okay, I normally wouldn't do this, but...
Like in Mongolia, for example, they only eat meat and never eat meat.
Yeah.
No. If I don't kill the animal, I will not eat it.
Right. So you stuck to your guns there.
Yeah. No, that's definitely something really, really close to my heart. You know, I'm too close to animals to be able to eat them. You know, it's like if we eat humans, it's not possible, you know?
So I know there's people listening that have the message of following your dream, and you've clearly been doing that. And your dreams happen to be, you know, these big expeditions and a lot of these things that are involving you out in nature in these extreme ways, extreme traveling. Maybe for some people, it's just, you know, traveling more or building a life around travel, but maybe they're not getting the support from family and friends. I want to get your take on this. I have no idea what your background is, or, you know, if you have a family right now, or your close friends that are, I mean, I'm sure you've had over the years, or your immediate family, even when you started. What has that process been like? Was everybody supportive in the beginning? I'm sure at this point now, they're just used to you kind of, oh yeah, that's what Sarah does. She goes off and she's going to walk for 3 years. But obviously you're like taking yourself out of their life for a long period of time. So there are sacrifices there could be with, you know, it could be difficult to maintain those relationships. I just want to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah. You know, real friend, they always stick around. There is not that many, but the real friend always stick around, and they know me for so many years that they know my way of life. So when I come back, I'm quite present, you know, like I do my best to spend as much time as I can. But if I'm not there, I'm not there. And they don't expect me to be there if I'm not there, you know. And when I start walking, that didn't really surprise my family because I was like that. I was this wild kid, you know, spending all her time in nature. I've been climbing trees and looking for birds for hours in the woods alone. I grew up, but I just remind this really curious kid with the binocular in the woods to looking for a special bird. I'm still the same. I haven't really changed.
So they were already used to you because that's your personality.
Yeah, that's me. I haven't changed.
Right. On this particular expedition, I mean, just looking at the map, and I mean, Siberia's, it's crazy how big of a distance you covered. What was the most uncomfortable part of the expedition? And that could be, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be, oh, I didn't have food. I mean, it could be anything you were feeling mentally or physically, or both, maybe. I'd like an example from each.
Yeah, for me, Mongolia has been a really hard part because for the first 2 months, I've been attacked every night by a Mongol guy on a horse. So I end up sleeping under the road. You know, you've got those concrete tubes, like evacuation pipe. And I just sneak in under the road at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And nobody would never come to find me there.
You had to hide.
Basically. Yeah, I was hiding like, you know, and sometimes they're not even 1 meter high, those things. I was crawling underneath but I was safe, which is the most important thing for me. And then I hit the Gobi Desert, which was amazing because there was not drink anymore. There was real culture, real Mongol people, you know, really cautious and nice and inviting and respectful people. So that was all different vision. And I was really happy to hit the Gobi Desert. It is a magic place. I recommend everybody to put that place in the to-do, in the bucket list, you know.
The Gobi Desert.
The Gobi Desert. It's a magic place. Doesn't look like it, but once you're in it, it's just something happening there. It's just amazing. Wildlife everywhere. It's just magical. And then for me, the downside was really China because I get arrested by the special forces there. China's been it's going like against the current all the time. It just, you push it every minute of the day. It's against the current. So it's been quite difficult for China for me.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast, and we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. Are you just ever sitting there, like you're hiding, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon for the, however, like the 30th day straight or whatever. Are you ever just like, why am I doing this? Do you ever get really down?
No, because you get to that survival mode, you know?
So something switches in your brain.
Yeah, you can't afford to think like that. This is really not a way to operate. You know, positive thinking, it's just like for real, you know? If you've got a positive thinking of anything, you will get positive things happening to you. So I decided to go my way, one step at a time, and taking care of every step and make sure I was okay. And when I had really downtime in Mongolia, for example, I would stop everything and I would make a tea. That was my trick. And by making a tea and drink my tea, that will change my state of mind. That would change the moment. And I will get into this amazing bubble where everything is okay after that. And then I will pack up everything again and then go and one step at a time again in my rhythm. And things will go right again, you know?
That's interesting. I think, you know, because if you start slipping, like sounds like you created this trigger for yourself where like, if I can go through the ritual of making tea, I can get present again, almost like a meditation, just kind of get you back on track. and feeling good again. That's I think a great strategy if you're traveling long term.
And people who actually read my book, some people say, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to make a tea, you know. So they get this little ritual, they add this little ritual in their life when things go a bit wrong. They actually mimic me and say, oh, I'm going to make a tea, you know, like Sarah. There is those little tricks like that, to just when things go wrong, to change the state of mind that you are in. You need to do something else to actually make your mind switch.
What's something most people don't know about you?
I don't know. I've been quite really open about what I've been doing and why I'm doing it. And I'm still doing it, you know. But one thing that I don't know, it's if tomorrow I will still doing it. I don't know. I never know. See, that's the thing. I always question myself and I always go where my guts goes. So I could change life at any moment. I could do completely different thing. But obviously, by asking me this question again and again, I always go back to nature, you know.
Yeah, I mean, do you ever think you will? Will there ever be a last adventure? You think you'll keep doing this over the next 5-10 years? I know it's hard to say, but I'm just
wondering.
Well,
I've got no clue. See, every time I come back, I don't get attached to this way of life, because that could be like a golden cage, you know. You could be actually in a cage. And that's exactly not what I want. So every time I come back from an expedition, I can do this little assessment of the situation, you know, like I ask the right question and I ask myself and reposition myself into my life. And just simple question, if I'm happy about this situation or not, you know. And then if I'm not, I change something.
Well, it sounds like you're happy with the way things have gone so far.
Yeah, it looks like
it. And you just went on another crazy expedition that you mentioned, and you're still here and we're talking, so that's a good sign. We're gonna have to keep an eye out for some stories around that. This book on this trip that we talked about today that Sarah took is called Wild by Nature, and you can pick it up, you know, where books are sold, and check it out. And Sarah, I have to ask you just a couple more questions. Do you have any practical tips for a traveler that wants to do some more extreme adventures like this, whether it's like taking a certain type of survival class or acquiring certain set of skills, or what are some practical tips you would give for somebody who wants to do something a little more extreme?
Well, when you start to be scared, that's when you have to start. That's what the good way to go. You know, when you start to be scared, you know, you know, we do course for this and this and this, but this is not actually the work. It's really efficient with any person. It's when you're uncomfortable about the situation, when you are feeling not right about the situation, it's that's where you have to go. You know, if you're comfortable with the situation and you think, oh, I'm going to do a course about this because I want to know more about it, maybe stop doing a course and just go, you know, go into the situation and learn by yourself, because nobody can know better than you in the situation. Because it's like everything. Like if I tell you something about a situation, you probably be the same situation and leave this situation completely different way, because you've got not the same background, not the same knowledge, not the same body, not the same mind. So the best way to doing it, it's experiencing everything by yourself.
Sort of the trial by fire technique, and then just leaning on your resourcefulness when you're
exactly.
in the situation.
And one step at a time, you know, not crazy things, but one step at a time, a little further every time.
Well, you've gone many steps and you've gone very far, and I'm grateful that you've stopped to take the time and share the story with us today, and keep putting your work out there, Sarah, because it's great to hear what you're up to. And I guess the last question is, what's next?
Well, what's the next challenge? It's writing the book, the next book, because it's always a challenge to write the book for me. It's not easy. That's my fifth book, but it's not my forte. So it's just like fighting with myself because I have to stay still on that chair, you know?
Yeah, that's not easy. I recommend a stand-up desk. I've been enjoying my stand-up desk.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good
exactly. It helps a little bit. Again, the book is Wild by Nature. It's by Sarah Mark Keese. I appreciate your time coming on and sharing your story with us, Sarah. Have a great day.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Sarah, thank you so much for stopping by to share your story. And my friend, thank you for taking the time to listen to this show and be a part of this virtual caravan, this worldwide community of listeners. Really, truly appreciate your presence here. Now, my friend, let me leave you with this quote from Mahatma Gandhi, staying on the subject of learning. I love to learn. It's fun to learn new things. Always be learning. And it's a mysterious process, right? It's kind of like when your hair grows. You know, you don't really see it happening, but then all of a sudden it's there. And I think learning is a little bit of the same way. If you're studying something, reading a lot, or just, I don't know, just kind of spending a little time to learn something new every day, all of a sudden you have the knowledge, but it's how long it takes and how you apply it. And I don't know, it's a strange process, but it's a lot of fun. And I've been learning a lot of things for a long period of time. And some of them I still don't feel like I'm getting any better at, for example, guitar. But yeah, I must be better, because if you compare how I played 10 years ago to now, or 5 years ago to now, I don't feel like I'm any better, but I guess that's just, I don't know if that's my personality or what. But anyway, Mahatma Gandhi has a great quote on learning. Quote, live as if you were to die tomorrow. Learn as if you were to live forever. I'll leave you with that. Till next time, take care.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.